Thanks tuned to yesterday, showcasing programs from the golden age of radio. I'm your host, Mark Levonier, and welcome to This Hour of Horror. Later on, a broadcast of the Hall of Fantasy from 1953. But first, a story from a Victorian age writer on the Weird Circle called The Old Nurse's Story. This syndicated episode heard on May 14th, 1944.
Welcome to the Ogden's Playhouse for another Weird Circle story. Tonight, we are to hear a classic mystery tale from the pen of Elizabeth Gaskell. This is an unusual story in every sense of the word. And now tonight's Weird Circle story, The Old Nurse's Tale, by Elizabeth Gaskell.
Phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, the old nurse's story.
Hear that? That tapping on the window pane? Yes, I know. Tonight it's the wind knocking the apple tree branches against the glass. But long ago, we in the big house heard that rapping, and it was not sound made by wind, nor by any mortal means. I, Hester, have been nurse for many years to this house of Ferndale. I spend my days remembering and reliving the past. I recall how Miss Maud and her sister, Miss Grace, were the prettiest young ladies in this countryside. Their father, Lord Ferndale, paid little attention to the motherless girls, so wrapped up was he in music, which was his hobby. And so, when he invited Tony Sorrento, a fine young musician, into the house as his guest, Lord Ferndale was blind to the court Mr. Tony paid to both the sisters. I remember like it was yesterday, for I was only in the next room sewing. I remember when Miss Maud turned on Miss Grace.
Look here, Grace, somebody has got to wake you up. You're acting awfully silly with Tony. You're positively moon-eyed.
Oh, am I? Anyway, I don't giggle at the least thing Tony says the way you do.
Grace.
Oh, Maud, let's not quarrel. I've wanted to tell you something for a long time, but I've been afraid you'd laugh. Promise me you won't laugh.
I couldn't laugh looking at your serious face. What is it, little sister?
I'm just terribly in love, Maud, and Father's going to have a fit, but I can't help it. I'm just awfully in love with Tony.
Oh. Grace, this will never do. Tony, Tony's no good.
Don't say that. Don't say it. And if there's anything you know, don't tell me because it's too late.
Grace!
Oh, Father.
Where are you?
Please don't tell him anything, Mark, please.
Girls, where are you?
Here, Father, in the library.
I wonder you wouldn't answer before I yell my lungs out. Maybe you two are ashamed to face me. Oh, I know what's been going on around here.
Nothing. Nothing's been going on. We don't even know what you're talking about.
Oh, don't you? Well, the whole town knows. Neither of you seem to care if our name is subject for the back fence gossips.
Get to the point, Father. What have you heard?
It's public knowledge that my guest, Tony Sorrento, has been courting both my girls, setting two sisters against each other. And you silly, stupid girls, without pride or dignity, permit this trifling nobody, this musical dandy, to make sport of you.
Don't talk that way about Tony. He hasn't been courting both of us.
I suppose, Grace, you think you're his heart's desire.
Father, don't be cruel. But Grace, Father's right. Tony has been making love to both of us.
Don't tell me. I won't live it. I don't believe it.
You've got to believe it, you little fool. Anyway, I've sent Tony packing, bag and baggage. You'll never see him again.
You what? Where is he? Where did he go? You've got to tell me. I've got to go
Grace,
to him.
Grace, use your hair.
Oh, listen to me, both of you. Tony and I were married yesterday.
Married? That cheap fortune hunter married to my daughter? I'll not have him joined to our family.
But, Father, I'm his wife and your daughter. And he is your son in spite of you.
Oh, in spite of me, indeed. Not if I renounce you as my daughter. Get out. Get out. Get out of my house. And don't ever come back.
If death had taken Miss Grace away, we in the house couldn't have mourned her more sincerely. Soon Miss Maud married, and we believed it was to get away from the gloomy place and from her father, rather than for love. Lord Fernvale's temper turned more hard and bitter after that, lashing out at nothing at all. And then, one winter evening, after Miss Grace had been gone about 6 years, I was at the big house visiting in the kitchen when my husband rushed in, telling us Miss Grace had come back and was at that moment standing at the front door. With her was a pretty little girl. We tiptoed, for we were only human, you understand. We tiptoed to the hall door to listen. But Lord Fernvale's voice would have reached us anywhere. We heard Miss Grace say,
"Father, I've come back. Let's both of us forget our grievances."
"You must be mistaken, young lady. I am not your father. I have one daughter living. Her name is Maud. Another daughter, Grace, died 6 years ago.
"But I didn't die, Father. I am Grace. And this is Angelita, your granddaughter."
"Mommy, I'm cold."
"We'll be warmed up in a moment, dear."
"I have no granddaughter. And only one daughter alive who married suitably and well. You've come to the wrong house, young woman."
"Oh, Father, you haven't changed at all."
"Mommy."
"But if you don't care about me, think about Angelita, your granddaughter."
"Mommy."
"Look at her, Father. She looks just like you."
"I'm awful cold, Mommy."
"I'm not interested in the child, nor in you. You must not persist in this madness, and I am your father. I tell you, my daughter Grace is dead."
"All right, Father, if that's the way you want it. But don't forget, I'm your daughter. And I, too, can be hard and revengeful and mean. And I swear to you, I'll hurt you some way, somehow. I won't rest until I make you suffer. I'll make you suffer."
"You'd better hurry to the village. You may be in time to catch the late train. Good night."
We all stood like stones, so frozen we were by what we'd heard. It was a cruel night for a woman and a child to be walking to the village. For there was a bitter wind rising, and snow was beginning to fall. My husband wanted to sneak out the back way and find Miss Grace and the little one, and hide them in this cottage here. But the master must have guessed our intentions, for he called us in and gave us all tasks to do, just to keep us busy and thwart our plans. When we'd finished, we thought Miss Grace and her child had surely reached the train by that time. But in the morning, as I walked across the back hillside pasture where the sheep grazed, Timothy, the shepherd, called.
"Hester! Hester! Come here! Quick!"
"What in goodness' name is it, Tim?"
"Here! Look! Look behind the pine tree! Against the rock!"
"Oh, merciful heaven! It's Miss Grace and the little one! Frozen like statues!"
"I heard about them coming to the big house. They must have got off the road and got lost in the blinding snow last night."
"Oh, Timothy, it's awful to see them sitting there. I can just imagine how Miss Grace and the little one groped their way up the hillside and thought they'd take shelter behind the pine tree against the rock. Oh, the poor lost thing."
"Mind you, Hester, how the big rock is just like a stone chair for her and the little one. Well, maybe their souls have peace and rest now."
I wonder, after all that's happened and the way they died, I wonder if their souls will ever find rest. We never knew how the master felt about the tragedy, but it was plain to all he was a softer man after that. Though, whether it was the death of Grace and the child, or good news that came within the week, or both together that changed him, it's hard to say. For Maud gave the house of Fernvale an heir, the master Robert. Lord Fernvale was fairly bursting with happiness and pride. He couldn't do enough for the boy. Lady Maud often brought Master Robert to visit at the house, and we all agreed he was an uncommonly fine, bright boy. We'd nearly forgotten the tragedies of the past, but we were soon to be reminded of them with awful clearness. When Master Robert was going on 6 years old, Lord Fernvale sent word to my cottage for me to come to the house and see him.
"Hester, My daughter Maud and her son Robert are coming to stay several months this winter with me. Her husband has business in the Far East. I would like you to act as nurse to the boy.
Oh, sir, I'd be very pleased. Master Robert's such a sweet child.
Robert's the only heir to carry on our family name. I want you to take very good care of him.
Oh, indeed. I shall care for Master Robert like he was my own son.
Esther, I'm an old man. I want peace now. I want Maud to be happy here. She's never been told about the death of Grace and the child, Angelita. We Fernvales are not very forgiving. I can't say how Maud would react if she knew the circumstances under which her sister and niece died, but what's past is past, and I can't change it now, Hester. I want you to promise me you won't ever speak of Grace and of past events.
Please don't say another word, sir. You can be sure I won't speak of what's none of my business. How could I know that this would soon become very much my business, and that I would be tempted to break my solemn word to the master? Indeed, we were all so happy the first few days Lady Maud and young Robert were with us, that it hardly seemed possible our household had ever been anything but happy. And then one day, I was playing a game with Robert on the library floor, and his mother sat knitting and smiling at us, when we heard a tapping, a light tapping on the window. I doubt Robert's mother or I would have noticed the sound, but Robert dropped his toy and looked toward the window.
Mommy, I'll bet that little girl came to play again, so I can't see her very plain.
Little girl? I didn't know there were any children around here. Oh, there aren't any, ma'am. There's not even a house within 3 miles of us.
Yes, that's true.
What little girl would be walking 3 miles in the snow just to see you, Robert?
I don't know her name yet, but I see her most every day. She stands outside the window and knocks like that till I notice her. And then when I go out, I can't find her anywhere. There. You hear that? You just wait. In a minute you can see her. You'll see her plain.
But if she's knocking on the window, why can't we see her now?
I don't know. She comes and goes. Just like a shadow.
What does a little girl look like, Robert?
Oh, she's just a girl. She's awful cold, though. She just shivers and shivers. There she is. See her, Mommy? Hester, look. Look, there's a little girl right outside the window.
Well, friends, as Elizabeth Gaskell's absorbing story unfolds, we shall see that young Master Robert seems headed for an undeserved fate because of his grandfather's unreasoning cruelty. We shall see, too, that the appearance of the little girl at the window is only the beginning of a chain of events of startling nature. Grace Fernvale enraged her father by an unsuitable marriage. When she returns with her 5-year-old daughter, Angelita, Lord Fernvale insists Grace is dead and refuses to let them enter. Grace screams that somehow she will make her father suffer. The following morning, the bodies of Grace and the child are found in the back pasture, frozen like statues. Lord Fernvale's other daughter, Maud, has married, and her small son, Robert, is loved by his grandfather. Robert tells of the shadowy figure of a little girl he sees outside the window, who beckons him to come to her. Maud, Robert, and his nurse hear the tapping on the window, but only Robert can see the little girl.
Anyone, Robert? Where do you see her, Robert? Where is she standing?
Right there. Right smack in front of the window. Oh, Mommy, I want to go out and bring her in so she can get warm by the fire.
All right, Robert. Bring the little girl in. Oh, ma'am, don't let him go out there, please. Can't you see? There's no little girl outside the window.
There is, too.
Hester, I'm going to prove to Robert that the little girl he thinks he sees is imaginary. Now, run along, Robert. Put on your coat and go bring in that cold, shivering little girl.
A little girl looks a little like you.
Oh, saints preserve us, ma'am. Now I'm sure of what I'm sure of.
What are you sure of, Hester?
Oh, I can't tell you, ma'am.
That's what I thought. Hester, the people around this countryside believe there's a ghost up every chimney. I was half frightened out of my life by the ghost stories I heard when I was a child. Now, I don't want Robert to believe those old superstitions.
But how do you account for the knocking, those taps?
I can't account for them right at this moment, but if I took the trouble to investigate, I'm sure I'd find some logical, reasonable explanation.
Well, if you'll excuse me, ma'am, I want to run out and see that Robert's all right.
Wait a minute, Hester. I'll go with you. We'll all three of us look for that little girl.
Robert's mother and I got outside the house quickly, and we followed Robert's little footprints in the snow to outside the library window. His mother said,
"Well, here are just Robert's footprints. There are no others anywhere around."
That's how I thought it would be.
Come now, Hester. Don't make a mystery out of nothing. You see, Robert's footprints lead around to the back of the house. He's probably gone to the kitchen to beg a sweet from the cook.
Yes, ma'am, I see. But I think I'll follow on around if you don't mind.
I think I do mind. I don't like the fear and hysteria in your voice. Robert will sense it, and then he really will imagine he's seeing things. Go in the house, Hester. I'll get Robert.
It seemed hours I waited in the house. I remember I went from room to room, pressing my face against each window, looking for Robert. I could hear his mother calling, first softly with confidence, then louder and louder. Finally, I knew she was frantic and afraid. I thought of Grace's last words to her father. "I won't rest till I make you suffer. I'll make you suffer." Cold fear like pencils clutched my heart as I thought of little Robert, the only heir to the family of Ferndale, and how through him terrible vengeance could be wrought. Finally, I heard the front door slam and voices in the hall. Father!
Hmm? What's wrong, Maud?
Father, I can't find Robert. I followed his footsteps to the back of the house, but then I lost them. So many people have been walking there.
Calm yourself, Maud. The boy can't have gone far. Where is Hester? Why wasn't she with him?
Oh, it was my fault. All my fault. I wouldn't let her look for him. But call everybody now. Everybody. Get everyone out to look for Robert. I got ready as fast as I could and joined in the search. And I started straight for a certain place I knew so well. For I had notions of my own about where Robert could be found. But I'd only gone a few steps when Lord Ferndale saw me and called.
Hester, where are you going?
To the back pasture, sir.
Wait a minute, I'll come along. Why would Robert wander over to this rocky, lonely place?
I don't think Robert wandered alone, sir.
What do you mean, Hester?
Don't ask me, sir. You think I'm crazy.
Wasn't it here somewhere that Timothy found Grace and a child, Angelica?
Yes, it was. We've only a few steps more to the pine tree and that rock that's shaped like a chair. Oh, come on, sir.
Hester, do you believe that curses and threats can be effective after death?
I don't know, sir. There's some who claim they've known of such things, but I'm sure I don't know. Around this way, sir. Around the tree.
Yes.
Oh, there he is. Oh, little Robert. Look at him. Sleeping. Sleeping on the very rock that's like a chair.
Great heavens, is he alive? Is he breathing?
Mommy.
Oh, he's alive. So cold. So cold.
Here, I'll wrap him in my coat.
I brought a blanket.
Hester! Father! Where are you?
Here we are, Maud. Come around the big pine tree. We found Robert.
Oh, thank heaven.
Oh, how did he get here of all places? And what's happened to him? Oh, he's unconscious.
Auntie Grace. Oh, Auntie Grace. Where's Auntie Rita?
Aunt Grace. My sister. Why, Robert didn't even know he had an Aunt Grace. And who's Angelita? Pay no attention. He's a bit delirious. It's just a strange dream.
Yes. A very strange dream. Hester, run ahead and get the doctor.
For days and nights, we fought for Robert's life. In his delirium, Robert kept up a running conversation with Aunt Grace and Cousin Angelita. First with one and then the other. And Lady Maud asked me so many questions which I dared not answer, for I promised the master. We took turns sitting by the bed, and as I sat alone one night with Robert, I felt what a terrible power hatred is. For I had no doubt but that Robert had been led to the stone chair where the bodies of Grace and Angelita had been found, and that he had been led there
through the hatred and vengeance of Grace. And then I thought, doesn't love, too, have power? Indeed, aren't we taught that love is greater than hatred? In fact, greater than all else. And then I said aloud, Grace, Grace, don't hurt Robert. He's never harmed you. Let the child go. Let go of your hatred. What's done is done. Forgiving is a happier way than hating. Listen to me, Grace. Forgiving is a happier way than hating. And true as I'm sitting here, from that night on, Robert turned for the better. In a few weeks, he was up and about, his bright little self playing again. And I was not surprised when, soon after Robert's recovery, his mother came here to the cottage to see me. Hester, I've heard rumors and whisperings at the house, and I've overheard things in the village. I know something about my sister Grace has been kept from me. I want you to tell me what it is.
I thought you'd ask me that before long.
I promised your father never to speak of it.
What's past is past. Why not let it be?
Because I think I have a right to know. Strange things have happened, and I won't understand them. Now, why not ask my father to release you from the promise of keeping silent?
Will you give me your word to hold no grudges? No matter what you hear, will you promise to be forgiving?
Yes, Hester. I promise.
Then I'll go back to the big house with you and speak to your father. I'll get my coat.
Hester, do you notice there's a strange light in this room? A red glow.
Oh, ma'am. Look. Look out the window. There's fire in the big house. It's the reflection we see.
Robert. Robert's in the house.
Oh, come on, Hester, quickly. We must save Robert. We must. We must.
We ran as fast as we could across the snow-covered lawns to the big house. But by the time we got there, it was a mass of shooting fire. It seemed to me that if anyone were inside, he could never get out alive. In front of the big house, men were trying to hold someone back. It was Lord Fernvale, struggling desperately.
Let me go, you fools. Let me go, I tell you.
Hold on now, sir. It's hopeless, sir.
There's Robert. Robert's inside. I've got to go. Let me go.
Robert, it's no use.
Nobody can stop me. Let go of me, you fools.
Oh, heaven help us. There he goes.
That's the end. The end of this house.
Yes, the house crumbled and fell, burning to the ground. And the head of the proud family of Ferndale died with it. For he had rushed in to save Robert and had perished there. We thought Robert had perished too. But as we stood there, fairly paralyzed with grief and shock, we heard Robert's voice.
Mommy!
Oh,
Mommy!
Robert! Robert!
Oh, child!
I can't believe my eyes. You're not real.
Sure I'm real. Only Angelica isn't real. She told me she isn't. She couldn't even light the fire.
What do you mean? What do you mean to light the fire?
Well, she came to the window again, and I asked her in to get warm. But the fire was out, so I tried to make a big light in the fireplace with papers and things.
Go on, child. Then what happened?
Well, Angelica said she wasn't real and she couldn't help me. So I did all by myself. But, Mommy, somewhere your shawl that was on the chair by the fireplace got a burn on it.
Oh.
And then the shawl lit up the curtain and just everything began to burn.
What did you do? How did you get out?
Oh, I wanted to stay and see it. But Angelica made me run. We got out through the French windows and ran up the hillside where Angelica's mommy lives in the snow. And Hester, Auntie Grace said I was to come back and tell you something.
Robert, your Aunt Grace doesn't live anywhere near here. Dear, you mustn't make up stories like that.
Let him tell it, ma'am. Let him tell it.
Well, Auntie Grace said she's sorry for what happened. And she says she doesn't hate anybody any longer.
What is Robert talking about, Hester?
We'll have a talk later, ma'am. I guess now this family can live in peace without fear of vengeance and old hatred.
Oh, yes. I must never forget some words. She said, I must remember that forgiving is a happier way than hating.
Oh, Robert.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought to you the old nurse's story. Bellkeeper, hold the bell.
Life has many an unexpected surprise. The touching climax in tonight's presentation of the Ogden Playhouse is an excellent example. Next week at this time, another Weird Circle mystery play, The Middle Toe of the Right Foot by Ambrose Bierce. Join us, won't you?
Weird Circle, on Tuned to Yesterday from May 14, 1944, a syndicated recording. The author, Elizabeth Cleghorn Gaskill, was well known in the 19th century for a variety of stories, most notably her ghost stories. One of them featured in a compendium of tales in 1859, put together, or as it was billed, conducted by Charles Dickens, where two of his ghost stories bookended the series in the weekly periodical All the Year Round. Her story contributed was The Ghost in the Garden Room. And during radio's yesteryear, only one more of her tales was adapted on air, and that was in two parts on the World's Greatest Novels series. For the weeks of March 8th and the 15th of 1946, adapting her story of people in an English village called Cranford. You're listening to An Hour of Horror on Tuned to Yesterday. I'm your host, Mark Lifonier. Now time for an episode of The Hall of Fantasy, with a story written by occasional performer and full-time producer and director of the show, Richard Thorne, called Stone's Revenge. This episode first broadcast on Mutual on August 17, 1953.
The Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the Hall of Fantasy. Welcome to the series of radio dramas dedicated to the supernatural, the unusual, and the unknown. Come with me, my friend. We shall descend the world of the unknown and forbidden. Down to the depths where the veil of time is lifted and the supernatural race is king. Come with me and listen to the tale of Stone's Revenge.
He let him stay out there in the freezing cold, pounding on the door and yelling, "Let me in." But Rose's daughter tried to let him in, but the old man wouldn't let her. So Jeff stayed there in the freezing cold, and the girl heard him say,
"I'll make you pay for this, Monroe. For as long as Monroe lives, I'll make you pay."
And that's the end of the story?
Not by a long shot, young fella. Ever since that time, people have died who stayed in that cabin. People up here say they've heard him pound on the door and yell, "Now let me in." And when they do let him in, they die. Real strange-like, they die.
Jim Loring was my best friend. His sister Betty more than my friend, for we were set to be married the following November. We'd all been working pretty hard, and we figured we needed a rest, so we took a 2 weeks vacation and headed up north. Before we left the city, Jim rented a cabin from a real estate broker about 400 miles north of here. We left about 3 in the morning and drove steadily.
Hey, what time is it?
11:30.
Oh, we've made good time.
Yeah, that's right. According to the last marker we saw, we ought to be pulling into Woodlake in a few minutes.
How far is the cabin from town, Jim?
Well, Gehring, a real estate man, said it was about 6 miles out of town.
You're sure he said there were fish in that lake?
Well, some of the best fishing in the state. That's what he said.
That's what they all say.
We'll have to stop in town and pick up plenty of food.
That's right. Enough to hold us for a few days anyway.
Oh, look, up ahead. I think we're coming to it.
Oh, we are. It says, you see, Woodlake, population 709.
Hey, big town.
You better slow down. You know these small towns.
Yeah. The broker in the city said I could get the key to the cabin from the sheriff. Seems he also owns a store here, Sheldon's General Store.
Well, if that's the case, we might as well pick up our food there.
Yeah, might as well.
Hey, look, there it is.
Huh? Oh, yeah, I see it.
Oh, open that door in a hurry. I just hope my muscles haven't frozen in this position.
Oh, that feels great.
Oh, boy. Beautiful day, isn't it?
Weather report said we're in for a storm tonight, though.
Oh? Well, maybe it'll blow over by tomorrow.
Oh, it's nice and cool in here.
Yeah. Anything would be cool after driving in that hot sun.
Oh, it doesn't seem to be. Oh, yes, there is, leaning back in that chair with a paper over his face. Look.
He's sound asleep.
Pretty alert fellow, isn't he?
Yeah. I heard that, young fella.
I was only joking.
Don't you worry none, son. I can take a joke as well as the next one. You'd be wanting something, maybe?
Yes, we rented a cabin up here, and we need some food.
And you come to the right place.
Yes, sir. Now, what can I do you for? You'd better take charge here, Betty.
All right. Well, let's see. We'll need some eggs. About 2 dozen.
Coming right up. Yeah. You come here to practice morning? Where do you stay?
Oh, the old Monroe place. A real estate man in the city said we could pick up the key from you.
Yep, I got the key, all right. Yeah, what else, ma'am?
Well, let's see. Some bacon, a pound of coffee, pancake flour.
Flour.
Potatoes, oranges, some cream, sandwiches.
Wait a minute. Hold on, ma'am. I got what you said, but don't say no more, because if you do, I'll forget everything. So, you're staying at the old Monroe place, huh?
That's right.
Let's see now. Coffee, flour. You got a 5-pound sack of potatoes here.
Oh, that'll be fine.
Go over there and help yourself to some oranges, ma'am, and anything else you see. Just pick it up and set it on the counter here.
All right. I guess that will be the easiest way.
Yeah. So, you're staying at the old Monroe place, huh?
You said that once before.
Yeah, I know I did. I know it. I just wanted to be sure I was hearing right.
Well, your hearing's all right, Sheriff. By the way, may we have the key?
Sure enough. It's right here under the counter, you know. Yeah, long time since that cabin's been rented.
Oh? How come?
People just don't like to go up there.
Oh, why not? Anything wrong with them?
Not exactly. Still the best cabin around these parts. Got a nice refrigerator. Indoor plumbing. Real nice place. But you oughtn't to go up there.
Why?
Because of old Jeff Stone. People around here say they've seen him up there.
Oh, he won't bother us.
Don't you count on that, young fella.
Look, if he comes around the cabin, we'll ask him to leave.
Only leave and that'll be done. It'll be done by you.
Why? Is he dangerous?
Yeah, he's dangerous. And he's dead, too.
What do you mean?
Just what I said.
Well, you can't expect us to believe...
I don't expect you to believe nothing. I'm just telling you what I know for a fact.
The real estate man didn't say anything about...
He's only interested in renting it. Now, you listen to what I gotta say.
So I don't think...
Let him talk to you. Thank you. I'll tell you about what happened up there. About 15 years ago, it was. Old man Monroe hated Jeff Stone. Used to make life miserable for Jeff. And Jeff used to come in here and say that he was going to get even someday. And the hatred inside him would come out on the surface. It even made me afraid. It was the wintertime when it happened. Old man Monroe was in his cabin, and there was a big storm outside. One of the worst we ever had up here. His daughter was with him. She was the one who told me what happened. Jeff got himself caught outside in that storm. He knew the only place he could reach was old man Monroe's cabin. So he fought his way through the blizzard, and he got to the cabin half full. Yeah, he pounded on the door.
Let me in.
Old Monroe knew it was Jeff outside. He wouldn't open that door. He let him stay out there in the freezing cold, pounding on the door and yelling, let me in. Well, Monroe's daughter tried to let him in, but the old man wouldn't let her. So Jeff stayed out there, froze to death. But
just before he stopped yelling, the girl heard him say,
"I'll be safe, Miss Monroe. For as long as Monroe lives, I'll be safe."
Yes, Cherie, in the morning when the storm was over, they went outside and found him frozen to death.
And that's the end of the story?
Yeah, not by a long shot, young fella. Ever since that time, people have died who stayed in that cabin. First Monroe's daughter, then him, and then others. Anybody who went up there. People up here say they've heard him pounding on the door and yelling, "Let me in, let me in." And when the folks in the cabin let him in, they die. Real strange-like. They die.
As he spoke to us. Even though the day was warm, I could feel a chill creep over me as he told us the story of one man's revenge.
So I wouldn't go up there if I was you.
Certainly a frightening story.
Yep, sure is.
Is there any other cabin around here for rent?
Yeah, it's been a busy season up here. Most of the places got people living in them. I got a place, though, I could let you have. Not too bad a place, but you have it mighty cheap.
Maybe we ought to...
Nonsense. No, we'll go up to the cabin.
Well, it's all right with me.
Well, I think that about does it, Sheriff Sheldon.
All right, let me see now. 95 for coffee, 57 for bacon.
Are you sure we have everything we need?
Well, as long as you two manage to catch a few fish we have. Yeah. If you don't, then we'll be making quite a few trips in town.
Wait till we get out in the boat.
I'll wait until I get the fish into the pan.
Yeah, it comes to $11.92. You can check my figures if you want to.
Oh, no, we trust you, Sheriff, here.
Yep, out of 12. Yes, me. Always good to have a little business on the side, like this here store. Here's your change.
Thank you, sir.
Look, you're sure you don't want to go to my cabin, huh?
Well, we're sure.
Well, I warned you, you're walking in with your eyes open. I hope you walk out that way. That is a lie.
Far enough away from everybody.
Uh-huh. It's a good thing we have a map or we'd be lost.
Hey, look, I can see it.
Huh? Yeah, hey, so do I. Hey, it looks pretty nice.
Oh, and there's the lake. Oh, it's beautiful.
Hey, can I pick him or can I pick him?
Oh, the lake is so hard to get to that I bet it hasn't been fished much.
I can hardly wait to get out there.
They ought to be hitting pretty well this afternoon, huh?
We'll get the boat off the trailer and whip that lake to a froth.
Jim?
Mm-hmm.
I heard that story that the sheriff was telling me. You don't think there was any truth to it, do you?
Of course not. You notice when he finished, he said he had a place that we could rent?
Oh, I hadn't thought of that.
Well, I did. He just wanted to talk us out of coming up here. Always good to have a little business on the side, he said. I wonder how many people he's talked out of coming up here with that crazy story of his.
Yeah.
Quite a few, I suppose. But it did frighten me.
We found the cabin to be in excellent condition. We moved our things in, had a bite to eat, then Jim and I unloaded the boat and went fishing, while Betty took a sunbath on the beach in front of the cabin. The big ones weren't hitting, but the panfish were. And when we came in, we had a stringer full of bluegills, crappies, and perch. Betty fixed dinner, and we had all the fish we could eat. The rest of the evening, we took it easy, listening to the radio we'd brought with us or reading. The weather report was right that day. And a little after 9 o'clock, it began to rain.
Hey, we're right about the rain.
Yeah, sounds like it'll be a good one.
I hope we don't have rain the whole time we're up here. That would be just our luck.
Hey, who turned off the radio?
I did. Nobody seemed to be listening to us.
Well, put it on, will you? I want to catch the rest of the news before I turn in.
If we're going to get up early tomorrow, we'd better think about turning in.
Yeah, we'll hear the news and then call it a day.
Okay.
And that's the news of the world and the national scene. As for the local news, ladies and gentlemen, a bulletin has just been handed to me. Lawrence Graham, an inmate of the state institution for the criminally insane, escaped from the grounds a little more than 2 hours ago. So far, he has not been apprehended. His description following: 6 feet tall, gray hair and brown eyes, last seen wearing gray shirt and pants. This man is dangerous.
If you see him, on no account try to apprehend him, but get in touch with the local police of your area immediately. I repeat, this man is dangerous. Be very careful.
Turn off, Betty.
The state hospital is for the criminally insane. That's pretty close to us.
I think it's about 5 or 6 miles away.
Oh, they'll catch him. Don't worry about it. He won't get away.
I hope so.
Well, I think I'm going to turn in.
Not the lamp!
What's the matter?
I heard something.
So did I. A crash of thunder.
No, something else. I thought I heard a voice.
Oh, nonsense.
Maybe you're right. Maybe. There it is again.
I heard it, too.
Yeah, so did I.
We'd better take a look outside.
Yeah, all right.
No, don't go outside.
We'll just stand in the doorway and see if there's anything out there.
Anything?
No. Nothing.
Then come back inside.
Yeah. All right. Maybe it was someone lost in the storm.
Well, maybe it was the man who escaped. Or Jeff Stone. Someone is out there.
Yeah, there is something out there. We better go see what it is.
All right, I'll...
Let them in!
Outside the door.
Let them in!
Come on, let's see who it is. Okay.
Let me in.
Oh, I'm glad I found you here.
What's the matter with him?
I found him lying on the ground about half a mile from here. I've been carrying him ever since.
Here, let me help you.
Put him down over here.
That does it.
What's wrong with him?
I don't know. He doesn't seem to...
What's the matter with him?
He's dead.
Listening to the tale of Stone's Revenge on this week's journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy. We'll return to our story in just a moment.
The storm was getting worse. Outside, thunder roared and the rain fell in torrents. Inside, we turned to look at each other, for a dead man was lying on a couch.
Are you sure?
There's no pulse. He's dead.
Was he dead when you found him?
No. Then he must have died while you were carrying him.
Yes. Storm's pretty bad. You'd better stay here until it blows itself out.
Thanks.
Gordon.
Yes?
Come over here a minute.
All right. What do you want?
Don't talk so loud. Can you see his clothes?
Something to eat, sir.
No.
You live around here?
At one time.
You know who he is?
I remember the face very well, but the name escapes me.
What's your name?
I'd rather not say. Well,
why don't you drive into town and get some cigarettes, Gordon?
But we have...
Yes, we're almost out. I'll go right away.
But I don't...
We don't have enough, Jim.
Oh, all right, if you say so.
You ought to wear a raincoat.
No, I'll be right back. I'll get back as soon as I can with the cigarettes.
Hurry, Gordon.
What did the dead man look like?
Well, blonde. Nice looking fellow.
He's dead, huh?
Yeah. And we think the other man killed him.
The lunatic?
Yes.
He couldn't have.
Why?
Because he was captured a few minutes after that broadcast.
You must have turned your radio off right after the bullet.
Oh, yes, we did. But, Sheriff, then, who are the men in our cabin?
The men in your cabin? I'll tell you who they are. The young one was Tom Monroe. He was going up to see you.
Tom Monroe?
Yes.
Why?
To tell you that it just wasn't a wild story I told you. To tell you to get out of that cabin before it was too late.
Then the other man is...
Jeff Stone. I told Tom not to go, but he wouldn't listen to me. He said he didn't want any more people to die up there. And so he died himself.
Sheriff, Jim and Betty are still up there.
With Jeff Stone?
Yes.
Well, we're going to have to move awful fast to save him. Come on.
Get up to the top.
Hey, we're almost there. Keep driving.
Yes. I almost didn't make it down. I got stuck once up there.
We'll make her.
If anything's happened to them, I don't know what I
just
do.
Pay attention to the road.
All right. Here's the spot I got stuck in before. We're not moving.
Rocker, a little rocker.
Right. No, we're stuck. We're stuck good.
Then leave the car here and we'll travel the rest of the way on foot.
All right. Right. Let's get out.
I can see the lights through the trees. Come on, let's go.
All right.
It's slippery.
Yeah.
Watch your step.
Betty! Jim, we're coming!
Can't hear you, not with this storm and all.
Oh, I thought if he heard me.
You forget it. Just watch. Are you all right?
Yeah, I guess so.
Here, I'll help you up.
Thank you.
There you are. All right, let's go.
All right.
We're almost there.
Yeah. I hope they're all right.
We'll go in quietly,
huh?
Just open the door and walk in.
Right.
The storm ought to cover any sounds we make.
Right.
And you just let me handle this.
All right.
Here we go. It's locked.
We'll have to break it down.
Together, then.
All right. Well, that was Betty.
We got to get that door down.
Right.
That's it.
Betty, what's wrong?
You,
of course. I brought the sheriff with me.
Where's the man that was here?
Oh, he's gone.
I thought it was you returning when you crashed against the door. That's why I screamed it. I was afraid.
Well, I want to be sure that... Yep, it's Tom Monroe, all right.
You know this man?
Yeah, he's the grandson of old man Monroe, who murdered Jeff Stone by letting him freeze to death outside. Jeff Stone's revenge is over now.
But if he'd killed other people that came here, then why didn't he hurt us?
Revenge is a strange thing, ma'am. In Jeff Stone's case, I think it was strong enough to bring him back from the grave to try to even the score. So he killed old man Monroe over again every time someone died here. And when he killed young Tom here, then his feeling for revenge left him.
Why?
Tom was the last of the Monroes, Mr. Blake. Jeff Stone's revenge is complete now. Yes, sir. It's complete now. And he can rest quiet in his grave.
So runs tonight's tale of the unusual, the terrifying, the unknown. Join us again when next we journey down the corridors of the Hall of Fantasy to hear another strange tale of the supernatural. Characters and events portrayed in these programs are fictional, and any similarity to actual events or persons, living or dead, is purely coincidental.
The Hall of Fantasy, on Tuned to Yesterday, a Mutual Broadcasting System episode originating from WGN Chicago from August 17, 1953. The author of the story, Richard Thorne, wore a lot of hats during radio's yesteryear, in addition to being a writer, also was a performer and director of the Hall of Fantasy, as well as other side jobs for the Mutual Radio Network, such as his role as announcer on The Enchanted Hour, which was a half hour of semi-classical music, and his last credited or recorded appearance from radio's yesteryear was in July of 1954 on the ABC show The Silver Eagle, in the vein of Straight Arrow or The Lone Ranger. And that wraps up this hour of horror on Tuned to Yesterday. Be sure to be with us next time for more great programs from radio's golden age. Until our next hour together, I'm Mark LeVillier. Thanks for tuning in.